Welcome to the Healing Grove Podcast. I'm Dr. Kristen Ryman, an integrative holistic family physician, author of Life After Lyme, and host in this virtual space of learning, healing, and growing. I believe humans are like trees, and our physical limb is only one of many. Health on all limbs of the tree, emotional, conceptual, social, spiritual, is absolutely required for the whole tree that is you to be vibrantly well. I created the Healing Grove Podcast as a place to showcase some of the world's best integrative and holistic medicine, to expose you to transformative tools and mindset shifts for all limbs of your tree. I hope you enjoy our conversation in the Healing Grove today as much as I enjoyed having it.
Hey, Megan Twight.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really happy to be talking to you. I feel like a lot of time has passed since we talked the last time, and I feel like you must be evolving like more rapidly than even the most rapidly evolving Pokemon figure.
Pretty much.
I've been hanging out with a 13-year-old boy today. So So I catch us up. Like, where are you? What are you doing? What would be the most important things that you want to share with us and also your future self who might be listening?
So much is going on. I feel like I'm having to make all my life decisions right in this moment. And I know that's an exaggeration and it's not true, but I do feel that way. So last time we talked, I had finished OBGYN, which was amazing and really sparked a fire, made me very excited about a future career in that field. And then the past 8 weeks, I was on my internal medicine rotation. So I just completed that a week ago. And now I am currently studying for my second board exam, which is step two. And then I'm off into fourth year and get to explore some electives, some away rotations, figure out where the heck I want to try to get into residency and all the future things.
So for people who may not see the difference between third and fourth year, do you have a sense yet of how different that's going to be than this past year has been?
Yeah, it definitely, I'm so excited because I think third year is really your opportunity to test the waters, like figure out, see everything, feel everything, be absorbed into the different fields of medicine, you know, the bigger buckets as I've kind of gone through this journey, what we've talked about. And then fourth year is where, you know, you're really starting to make that decision and like specializing, taking the advanced electives within that field that you've chosen is best in your future. So it's almost like, I don't know, in college, I feel like you take your foundational classes. And then once you get to your junior or senior year, you finally get to take like the more higher level in-depth classes. So now I finally feel like I get to really jump in 2 feet into the deep end within the OBGYN department. So that's what fourth year, I think, hopefully will be like for me.
Exciting. Do you have any rotations or electives that you've already lined up or that you are really hoping you get?
Yeah, there's one that I am thrilled about. I kind of created this elective opportunity with a affiliated professor at GW. He doesn't actually work at the hospital, but he has faculty designation of some sort. So he is a sexual health medicine doctor. He's very well is an amazing physician, and his patients are generally like older women, pre/postmenopausal, doesn't really matter, but that are having sexual health concerns. And he also does just like general well visits, but I'm going to be working with him in a couple of weeks for a 4-week rotation. And then, so I'm very excited about that opportunity. And then I also submitted my first away rotation application yesterday night to two different electives at NYU. The first is reproductive choice, which is talking about contraceptive care, abortion care in New York City. And then the other one is maternal fetal medicine, which is complex pregnancies, and we'll see. I'm really hoping to get into one of them or both of them.
Wow. So are they different months? So you could potentially be in both of those things?
Yeah, so I applied for both of them in kind of reciprocating. So depending on what they see, what they want, I could get one, I could get both, I could get none. I'm also going to be, they're rolling applications. So NYU is actually the first school on my list that has opened up their applications for electives. And then on Monday, Cornell opens theirs. So I have my application ready for that. And it's kind of just as the ball rolls, you continue to apply and see which ones you can get.
Awesome. Anything that you're doing that's outside of your future expected field? Like I remember thinking, wow, I really want to take, a radiology rotation. I really want to take things that, radonc, like things that I'm definitely not going to see, but I also want to know sort of how to refer to those people. Like, are you doing anything like that?
Yes. So because I am wanting to do two, maybe three OA rotations, which is definitely on, some people do know OA rotations. And for people that don't know what that is, it's kind of like a little tryout. So you go, you can apply to these other institutions outside of your home institution for these electives, and you spend 4 weeks at that institution basically trying to show off and like, so that when you apply to their program for residency, they have a face to a name. So you're basically putting your best foot forward so that when you apply to their program for residency, they know who you are and they want you there. Some people choose to do OA rotation, some people don't do any. But for me, since I have a very strong geographical preference and where I want to end up for residency, I find that it's going to be, I believe it's going to be most helpful for me to get on the ground, like working in these institutions so that they know me and they know my work ethic. So with that said, it doesn't leave a ton of space in fourth year for a lot of other exploration. However, I will be doing a POCUS elective, so a point of care ultrasound, which I think ultrasound is fascinating because I think it's being used so much more now in the clinical setting for diagnostic purposes. And being able to use an ultrasound on the fly, I think is going to be really important in my career, not only within OBGYN, but I actually think it's going to be super important across all fields of medicine. So I'm going to be doing a point of care ultrasound elective. And then my other electives are pretty OBGYN focused. I am doing an anatomy elective, which will be fun. And then I know that's your jam. And I'm doing a breastfeeding medicine elective. I'm doing an integrative medicine elective. I'm very excited about. I know we
Really?
have
Yeah,
that. Yeah.
where's that happening? Are you, is that the
That
West or that's local?
that's at GW. Yeah, they offer it. So
Wow.
you best believe I signed up for that one. And yeah, just like a lot of I'm not doing any totally outside of the box, but just things that are within my interests for sure.
Cool, very cool.
Yeah, I'm pumped.
So right now you said you're studying for your boards or for your step. Are you do you have any like academic duties besides just sitting and studying, taking notes, making notes, getting ready to take a test?
No, I'm in week two of 4 weeks. So we get 4 weeks, or I've created my schedule to have 4 weeks to prepare for step two. So I am my own boss right now. I create my schedule. I get to decide what I do with my days. They're long study days. Like I'm studying 10 to 12 hours a day, which is a lot, but I take Sundays off. And I try to make it an enjoyable experience and do things that like fill me up in my breaks and things like that. So I'm having a fine time doing this little study break.
And how does the amount of studying you're doing compare to your studying for step one?
So step one, I had an 8 week dedicated period. So definitely a longer duration. However, my days look very similar. So it's more of a sprint, I think, for step two. You have all of your clinical experience behind you. So your knowledge base is much deeper than when you were preparing for step one. And I think it's just a different exam. I mean, Do you recall step two in comparison to step one?
No, I mean, not specifically, but I recall what I do recall is that what I had been told about it in terms of preparation was really accurate, you know, which is that step one, they always said step one, you prepare for 2 months. Step two, you prepare for 2 weeks. Step three, number two pencil. Don't forget your number two pencil. And and step one is much more in depth in terms of like the biochemistry and the general, like the basic stuff that you're studying for the first 2 years. And then you take step one before you move on to the clinics. And then step two is really kind of a recap of the clinics. And so there's a lot more, well, it's clinical medicine basically. In fact, what I do remember about step two is often there'd be a super involved biochem, like step one-ish question in step two. I would just cross those off as the wrong answer because that's not what they were looking for really in steps. They're looking for your, you know, the things you picked up in clinic, which is very different from what you're doing when you're just cranking through books.
And so much better. I just love, honestly, studying for step two, reading the vignettes and being like, every question starts out with X-year-old female or male presenting with X. And it just feels so real being, I don't know, I almost look at each question as like I'm meeting this person in clinic, and it feels honestly kind of fun to work through these questions versus step one, where you get all the biochem stuff and you're like, crap.
Yeah. Pathways versus people.
Exactly. There you go.
Well, cool. I'm excited for you. I think it'll be a blast, you know, having a month to prepare and then really just being able to download what you know. Curious to hear about what the last 8 weeks were like on internal medicine.
I was pleasantly surprised. I would say I had my doubts going in because I think I've said this in the past, but like I really like to identify a problem, work through it, figure it out, and have there be an outcome that feels right and meaningful. And what I worried about with internal medicine is that patients were going to come in and they were going to have, seven different health concerns. They have one that brought them into the hospital, but there are an accompanied bag of other things, and I would not really be able to fix any of them well. I think I would be able to, help them with this one thing, but not feel like I was able to really make a difference in their lives. And to me, that just it doesn't fill me up as much as something like in OBGYN, you have an outcome that is right and you move on. And same with surgery. And that's why I always thought that that's how my brain worked. And I always created this narrative about needing there to be this, full loop, full circle moment. And what I found actually within my 8 weeks is that I really loved thinking through broader differentials and thinking through, the patient comes in with this. This could be what's happening, but also this, and this could be what's happening. And how is that impacting their other symptoms and their other medical conditions? And you just have to, it's much more of a web of problems, connecting them, finding solutions. There's just so much more to think about than when you have a patient come in with one concern. And I enjoyed it. I really did. I felt like I got to think critically. I will say the one thing that I did struggle with is I never felt like my patients left the hospital much better. Like they always felt like they left 10% better. And to me, that's hard. And I think that's that the truth is, like some I was working at the VA and a lot of our patients were older with a lot of comorbidities, and that was the nature of it. But for me, that just was a little bit hard and not as fulfilling, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the level of chronic just sort of disability at the cellular level, you know, in multiple systems that is presenting these days that people come in with, there's so much. And I would say even if someone's 10% better, that's a pretty good number, for the level of for the kind of level of sickness that people have. I
Yeah.
remember feeling similarly, like, wow, we are not doing much to stem the tide here. We're
Yeah.
just kind of like helping buoy someone up a little bit to get them to the next, hopefully not next admission, but to the next state
Right.
journey. But a lot of times it was to the next admission. It was really disheartening.
Yeah. And what was also hard for me is there's problems when someone's admitted to the hospital with a chief complaint, that's your focus. But there, when there are a lot of other problems that they oftentimes would call outpatient problems, so problems that they weren't gonna, bring in consultants from other specialties in the hospital because that sort of medical care can be done outpatient. However, I looked at these patients and I knew, whether it was access to care, a ability to or motivation to go to these follow-up appointments, whatever it was, like I could tell when there was gonna where there's a patient where their outpatient care is not going to be an option. And it just was hard to be like, okay, well, I guess I could only focus on this inpatient problem, even though these outpatient problems aren't going to be addressed outpatient. So to me, I just struggled with that. And I think that's like a systems problem as well, just because of, money and what treatment a patient can get on an admission versus, what they can get outside of the hospital.
Yeah, and I can so remember that frustration, Megan, and feeling like, well, okay, so maybe checking a vitamin D level is not going to get reimbursed by the insurance company who's paying for this stay of this infectious disease, right, or this meningitis, but it's relevant, right? It's relevant to why this person is sick. But because it's not considered part of the bundle of like acute ca medical care for this condition, and insurance is not going to pay for it, we're not going to order it right now. But I think what the mismatch and the frustration comes when people, well, like me, for example, come in thinking, well, we've got them, they're here, why are we not doing everything we can to kind of take this person's health to the next level? But also the mismatch between patients and families who think, well, okay, my dad's been suffering for years. He's finally ready to talk to a doctor about it. We have an admission because he qualifies for an admission. And so the doctors are going to take care of all of it, but they're not going to actually take care of all of that. They're going to get him stabilized for the thing he came in with or the thing that could kill him and send him back to his primary care doctor, which, like you said, may or may not exist or be a realistic expectation for that person.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the other kind of interplay that I realized with internal medicine is you're totally the middleman. You're the middleman between the patient, their family, all the consultants that you've brought on to the team. Say your patient has a heart problem that you're treating and you bring on a cardiologist, but they also have a kidney problem, so you bring on the nephrologist, and everyone's giving you recommendations. But then it's your job, to place the orders, to contact the family, to make sure you've closed the loop with X, Y, and Z consultant. And it almost becomes this role of like you're like managing all of these buckets at once. And that was interesting to me.
Yeah, it sounds like it was interesting, and it like you're still kind of carrying a little burden of the memory of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I wish I think I wish that more things got done each day. And maybe that's just the nature of medicine. Maybe that's the nature of the hospital that I was working in. Maybe it was the nature of the patients that I was trying to help, but days would go by and it didn't feel like much was happening sometimes. And I'm curious if you ever felt that way or if I just need to reset my frame of reference of how things go. But I was just always, I don't know, wishing that patients weren't staying in the hospital for, 70 days. We had patients that were there for so long and it didn't feel like much was moving forward.
Because it's not. It's not moving forward. I don't think it's just your hospital or just medicine. I think it's the way the system works and doesn't work. I mean, if you can even consider like a Monday to Tuesday, what gets done between Monday and Tuesday, and then consider a Saturday to Sunday
Oh.
when you have a skeleton crew, like you have, bare minimum staff. Everyone's trying to get home. It's not, it's a different work ethic and a different capacity in terms of people and people hours, and so even less gets done. And it's difficult because you're not, it's not just you, wielding the ultrasound and drawing the blood and running to the lab to process the sample. Like it's different people and different patterns and systems with all sorts of competing demands. And so you start to have expectations that are different between weekdays and weekends, right? And none of them are super satisfying because they all move way more slowly than you'd want.
Exactly. Yep. So that's kind of how I felt. I think the positives were I really enjoyed the complex care, thinking through larger differentials and the interplay between complex comorbid conditions and the chief complaint. The downfall was I just didn't feel like I could make an impact and things were moving forward at a rate that felt satisfying.
I hear you. I also heard a lot of medical jargon in that sentence.
I don't, it's,
I'm just, you may
yeah.
not even be aware. I'm wondering if you're aware of how much your English and your spoken word has evolved Pokemon style into the doctor speak.
I actually don't think it's kind of, that's funny you say that, because when I talk to Malin about my day, he kind of tells me the same thing. He's like, you need to rephrase that whole sentence, but in like non-medical terms. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah, I think it's just you get into the flow of your days and your environment. It's kind of hard to switch it off.
Of course it is. I mean, you're in a you have you are part of a different culture, and you have been subsumed into that culture, and you have adopted the culture's norms and language, as you should. Like, I'm not criticizing it. I just think it's interesting. I think if we compared this conversation to your very first conversation on the podcast, you may not have known what chief complaint meant or comorbidity, right?
Yeah.
Like, or consultant, or like they're not medical terms, but they're part of the medical culture and the hospital culture, and it's just
Yeah.
worth noting. You're very
We're
fluent.
growing. Oh, still a little baby in this long, long journey, but definitely feel like this year has brought me exponential growth within the field of medicine. And just learning every day is massive amounts of learning, and it's amazing. I love going into work or the day into the hospital, and I think it's a privilege. It really is a privilege, the job that we get to do. And I think it's easy to lose sight of that. And I see a lot of people in our environment losing sight of that. And it's really hard, which is why I've turned to writing. This is something that's very new for me. I've always been like a journaler, casual journaler about, very lighthearted little things. But I think I have a lot of thoughts and ideas and criticism, but also my own flaws that I need to get on paper. And so the thing that I've been doing is just writing. And it's been so amazing. And I've recently started sharing my writing through a very small little Instagram that I made for only like whoever, I think I have like 60 followers, but for whoever really cares to listen. And it's been a great outlet because there's too much going on within the medical field to not feel a sort of desire and need for an outlet. That's what I've come to realize is we just need to talk about things more.
I love that. It's a process. I don't love that I don't have your Instagram handle for that, though. Is it like so secret that I don't get to be on there?
No, I shared it with everyone. I will share it with you. And you can, it's just meg.med.motion. And it's basically about finding wellness in an environment where wellness is not discussed. And whether that's through movement, through writing, through plants, through faith, I kind of talk about it all. So feel free
I'm
to give her a
so
follow.
excited to know that. We'll put a little link to it in the show notes since you
Okay.
podcasted that just now. That's awesome, Meg.
Yeah.
That's really great. It's been so incredible to watch you kind of work your way through this jungle.
We're trying.
Have you looked
And I
back at some
don't,
of the, oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
and I'm just curious. Like, I don't know. I don't anticipate it getting easier. I think it's going to get a lot harder once I go to residency. And I've tried to stay really grounded and true to myself. And it's been really hard. And there's definitely been moments where I've slipped through the cracks. But I think about the tr how challenging med school has been. And then I look at the residents and I'm like, uh-oh, that doesn't look easy. So I have fear. I have fear about starting residency and what that journey is going to look like.
I think that's fair. Do you have plans to take your self-care actions to the next level or add something to your process to give you even more support?
Yeah, I'm actually writing about this right now, and I think it for me, from my understanding, it's all about culture. Because if we think about this idea, you know, we can talk about burnout until we're blue in the face, and I feel like that's, you know, the new big buzzword is burnout in medicine. But I think what is critical is that instead of talking about burnout, we talk about wellness and what genuinely makes us feel well. Because if it's not, you know, what you spend as a resident 80 hours of your week doing, then why do it? Like, genuinely, why do it if you can't find that wellness within the hospital walls? And so that's why I think, you know, when we talk about work-life balance, I feel like it's always like work. And then here's your life, and it brings you balance. But why can't we walk into the hospital and have that be the thing that brings us up? Like the people that that you surround yourself with, the connections you make with your patients and the people around you, like it shouldn't be an environment that we are just waiting until we can leave to go finally get that balance. You know, like I, so for what I am really attuned to now is the culture of residency. Like I can't be in an environment that's going to be toxic or is going to be just draining. I don't know. So it's gonna, that's why I actually think I'm so driven to do these away rotations, because I need to feel it. I need to see the energy, see the dynamics, understand, you know, why people are there. Because the people you, at the end of the day, the people you surround yourself with are what make your experience. And it can really break your experience. So that's where I'm at with that.
Wow. So, do you have a sense of how hard or easy it might be to find a culture that is embracing of this notion that we can create a beautiful life balance at work together culture?
I'm not aware of it. I genuinely, and OBGYN is not notorious for being the most uplifting community and environment. It's intense, and it can be cutthroat, and that's the reputation. And you know, reputations are whatever. I don't necessarily think that that means every incoming class has to ascribe to whatever the previous classes have set the tone as. However, it's hard coming in as an intern your first year and being like, this is how the culture is going to be. So that's the reality. I think knowing, being very firm in what I value and how I want the culture to look and the people to act around me is going to be key. And I do believe that I can create that sort of culture and I can find that in OBGYN, and I'm hopeful that it exists.
I mean, at the very minimum, you're going to get to spend a lot of time one-on-one with women and their families in a very sacred moment, allowing for and holding space for the most beautiful possible sacred event, which, if nothing else in your whole residency experience, every one of those moments can be incredibly meaningful.
Without a doubt. I know the patients are going to be what makes my experience truly. I just hope and desire and would love to be surrounded by colleagues that also feel that sort of energy and would love to seek wellness within the walls of the hospital. That is my goal. But I do agree, the patients are going to bring that.
You will live that, Meg, and others will see that as permission to live it for themselves, because it's not that hard to get super psyched about a birth. It's not that hard. Turns out
No.
Babies are easy to love, even when they're covered in goo. You know,
when they spray in the face. Yeah, no, I agree.
And everyone's pooping and there's fluids and there's blood. I mean, it's still pretty miraculous and adorable and incredible.
I'm so excited. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. So this is a big stay tuned moment. We'll see. So much unknown, Kristen, and it really makes me, I'm a planner. I like to know what's going on. I like to be two steps ahead of the game, and having all of this unknown of where I'm going to be, who I'm going to be surrounded by, with what city, what hospital system, is just a challenge, a patience project.
Well, you're building the airplane while flying it, and you're not sure what the destination is yet. All you know is you're in the air and you got people to take care of and yourself to take care of.
Amen.
Is there anything else, Megan, that we should talk about in terms of where you are on your healer's journey or in your life or anything on your heart or mind that you'd like to share tonight?
I think the final word is, and this was from an experience I had in internal medicine, so I think it's valuable, is that it's okay to feel the emotions that your experiences make you feel. And I think it's in the hospital, it can be very hard to express your emotions when you're seeing something challenging or you're working with someone that's really sick. And it can be your emotions are oftentimes dismissed. And I am committed to the belief that I will not become numb. I want to feel everything that there is to feel within this career of medicine that I get to be on. And so just giving myself and my future self the grace and the privilege to feel these things without feeling like I have to protect myself or shelter these or run to the bathroom to feel these emotions. Just express them, because it opens the doors for others, and everyone feels things. Some people don't show their emotions externally, but if you do, that's okay. And just do it. So that's what I'll leave my future self with, and just everyone. You don't need to hide emotions. Let them out, let them be seen.
Beautiful. Thank you for those words of wisdom. It's been a pleasure talking with you tonight. I can't wait for the next time.
Me too. Thank you for having me. This is such a pleasure to be able to speak with you and to have this time capsule. I'm very grateful.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Healing Grove podcast. If you liked it, please be sure to like and subscribe. And if you want to deepen your experience further, consider grabbing a copy of the Healing Grove Playbook. With journal prompts for this podcast and 41 others, it's the perfect place to record your learnings, keep track of the tools you explore, and reflect on your own experience. Finally, it's important to mention that even though I am a doctor, nothing you hear on this podcast, whether from myself or my guests, constitutes medical advice. Any intervention you try should always be discussed with and supervised by a trusted member of your own healing team. Thanks for listening, and see you next time in the Healing Grove.